21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Noah Dankner runs our board. Joining us this hour is Marta Williams. Marta is a well-known animal communicator, biologist, and teacher. She has added so much to the community worldwide in assisting others as they learn to listen and see what animals and nature are telling us in our ongoing collaboration and sharing of life together. I hope you'll stay with us this hour for a wonderful odyssey into Marta Williams' exploration of how we and our animals are reflexive or mirror each other. What each does is tied up in some way in the world we experience. For instance, a couple that bickers might find their own dog snapping at another dog. A dog who might be afraid to go out into the world just might have an owner that is the same kind of person. Conversely, a dog that is kind and bold might help its human become the same. Marta's newest book, My Animal, Myself, A Breakthrough Way to Understand How You and Your Animal Reflect Each Other, is a New World Library 2013 release. And to follow up after the show, go to Marta's website, Marta, M-A-R-T-A, Williams.com. Marta, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. I have admired your work. I've read your books, and I know so many other animal communicators who, like myself, have really benefited by your guidance. Why don't you share with our audience a little bit about your own journey into becoming an animal communicator? I mean, like, did anything in your childhood play a big role?
The only thing I can say that I can think of is just that I was always really sensitive. You know, I was one of those sensitive children, so I would pick up how everybody else was feeling really easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I had that capacity from a young child. But I wasn't doing this consciously as a teen or into my early adulthood. I really started doing this just like you apparently have taken classes and studied it and anybody else who does.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about it early on in this game, you know, in the 80s, and said, "You're kidding me. This is real. You can actually do this?" Because I just thought it was great science fiction novels, you know?
Sure.
And so I went and took a class, and through that process, finally, by doing a lot of experimentation, convinced myself that it was real. Once I did that, then I went, well, if this is real, this is the coolest thing, you know, since sliced bread, and people need to find out about it. And then I realized that science wasn't open to it, which is pretty much what's happened with Rupert Sheldrake.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He's a microbiologist who's done a lot of work in this field, and science just ignores him, you know.
Yeah, even the TED Talk didn't want to hear from him. It's amazing.
It's amazing. And Rupert says there's a taboo on this stuff.
Well, you know, there's a taboo on telepathy to begin with. And there's a taboo on humans' powers awakening, the inner powers of all being connected and capable of communicating with each other. So I think it's bigger than animal telepathy.
There's a special taboo on giving more power to animals and nature.
Mm-hmm. Like saying that they actually have consciousness that is similar to the consciousness that we have?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's really crossing a line in modern world that has been, there's a real barrier that's been constructed in modern culture over the last 8,000 years that has cut us off from nature and animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think there's, you know, the taboos are there for historical reasons that when you start delving into it are pretty powerful, you know.
Sure. Sure. And it was also, you know, the decimation of shamanistic cultures by Western scientific rules.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So we're talking about millenniums of lifetime experience and culture being destroyed by a worldview that says, I'm in control and nothing else matters.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Was there a definitive moment in all of this process or a relationship with a particular animal that was your aha that says, I like this so much, I want to teach this?
I actually I actually went on a vision quest, and that was kind of what started it all, because I was saying, look, I'm an environmental scientist. I'm doing hazardous waste site cleanups. I'm doing creek restoration. I'm doing wildlife rehab. But you know what? None of this is going to really make a difference. It's kind of like, you know, standing in the ocean and saving one starfish type thing, you know. Sure, that one starfish cares, but, man, there's too many of them, you know. So I was trying to find another way to work that would be more effective. And I was really asking Spirit, show me what I need to do to really help the animals and the earth, and that's how I got led to this field. Now, in my book, Learning Their Language, that was my first book, where I tell you how to do this, and I tell you everything I know, basically. I talk about my cat, Jenny, who was the one who finally convinced me, because I came home, and the person I was with at the time was very skeptical and said, well, if you can do this, tell me what Jenny did today. So I went and talked to her, and I said, so, Jenny, tell me what you did today. And she showed me pictures, because that's one way that this can work. And she showed me a picture of she and a squirrel sitting up on a fence touching noses, and, like, just talking to each other. And I said, well, I'm getting a picture of Jenny and the squirrel up on a fence touching noses. And my friend said, oh, my God. And I'm like, oh, my God, that really happened? You know? Mm-hmm. And that was really the turning point for me, because how would I have known that? I had never seen Jenny do that. Cats don't typically do that. Squirrels don't do that with cats. You know, it's just not something. It's what I call a wow. It's not something I could have made up or would have
right.
made up.
And I think, you know, exactly that point is what I also found in my early experience of this, is that the animals will tell you things you wouldn't have thought of on your own.
That's right.
And it's not imaginary. I mean, for somebody in the audience who says, well, I love my dogs and I love my cats and my ferrets and my hamsters and my parakeets and the this and the that, but I can't talk to them. I can get a feeling about them. Can
right.
you describe how this sort of mirroring is part of this conversation?
Yeah. Well, let me just address that issue of, oh, you know, I can't get back from my animals. Most animal lovers know that their animals understand them, so that's the easy part. In my other books, I have three other books, I do talk about animal communication and how to do it. And essentially what I advise people is to work with animals you don't know and do things where you can actually verify them so you can convince yourself. You have to have those wows to be able to say, okay, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time when you work with your own animals, you can start to get enough information that convinces you. Like maybe someday they'll tell you, hey, my paw hurts. But you'll go, well, you're not acting like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on that day, they start limping. And then you go, oh, my gosh, okay. But the way you hear back is you have to pay attention to your intuitive impressions, which could be thoughts, feelings, pictures, hunches, hits. That's what you have to start getting back in touch with. And so that's all part of, you know, the sort of the nuts and bolts of learning how to do this. This book, My Animal, Myself, the subtitle is A Breakthrough Way to Understand How You and Your Animal Reflect Each Other. This book came about from my 20 years of working with clients, helping them with their animals, dogs, cats, horses, you know, everything in between, and realizing that often what was going on with the animal was a reflection, either directly or indirectly, of something going on with the person. So often, in order for an animal's issues to be resolved, whether they be physical or behavioral, the person had to address something going on with them first. And sometimes when they would address what was going on with them, the whole thing with the animal would resolve. So let me give you some examples, unless you wanted to ask me a question.
No, I'd love that.
Okay.
I think it's great.
So a really, like I said, it could be direct, it could be indirect. So a really simple example of a direct would be I have a new horse. He had a bad behavior when I would get on him where he would start backing up. And I didn't know what to do because I'm not a super rider. I'm not bad, but I'm not great, you know. And I wasn't sure what to do. And so I got somebody to help me, and instead of helping me, she was supposed to just hold him. She got more freaked out than I was, and then my horse got even more freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
So we were both, both humans were going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And my horse was like, oh, my God, even more. So it was a direct translation of how we were feeling and what we were thinking to him, and he just magnified what we were doing. And that's just really common with riding horses. You have to be calm when you get on a horse, so the horse is going to pick it up and respond accordingly. Most horses will.
Right.
You know, some horses that are really easygoing won't do that, but most horses will respond. So that's a direct translation of mental, something mental. A more complicated example would be a woman who had a dog that was starting to get very aggressive with people. And when she worked with the communicator, she realized that she really didn't like people. And her dog, who had been nice before she got him, was actually reflecting how she felt as a way to be in sync with her and to show her how she was feeling inside. The other thing that I believe that dog was doing was what I think, it's my theory and my, you know, thesis in this book, is that animals are our biggest healers and teachers. And that dog was saying, you know, this isn't really optimal. This isn't really a good way to be in the world. Let's change this. Let me show you what's wrong with it. Let me show you where this is leading. Because what was happening was she had to stay inside all the time. She couldn't go out with her dog. She didn't want to go out anyway, so she was isolating more and more and more and becoming agoraphobic. So what she did was she said, okay, this is not optimal. This isn't right. My dog is showing me this is not healthy. This isn't a good way to be. And she went about, she said about getting help for herself. And in that process of getting help for herself, everything shifted for the dog.
And of course, though, this takes a willingness and a desire and interest on the part of the human to pay attention and to have respect and regard for what this other sentient being is presenting. It's not
That's
just
right.
a dog, you know, it's a dog that has consciousness and is aware of you.
Yes. I mean, people who abuse animals, there's a mirror there, too. The animal's showing them, this isn't okay, I'm not happy, this is horrible, I'm miserable, but nobody's doing anything because somebody who abuses animals is stuck, you know, and mm-hmm. they don't know how to get out of it. But people who love their animals want to know what might be going on that might not be optimal. What might be going on that might be negative that my animal might be reflecting from me or about me or because of me.
I was going to say, and it does get a little more complicated when you have multiples of animals and multiples of species of animals.
That's right. You can actually see different parts of yourself reflected in the animal you have.
It's very true.
It does get, you have to take notes. But what I did in my book was I said, okay, this is a really complex field. That's no joke. It's complicated. So let me show you what it's all about. And I broke it down into categories. I broke it into positive or negative, mirror, you know, reflection, direct or indirect. And then there's four categories. It could be emotional, mental, physical, or spiritual. And so I do stories throughout the book that show you these different modalities so you can understand how it works. So by the time you get through the first five chapters, you will understand how this works.
Oh, and it's beautifully done with pictures of the animals, with their humans. Yeah. It's really a beautifully composed book as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, you have to understand how it works before you can understand how it might be happening in your life with your animals.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much as you read along, you're going to go, oh, yep, okay, yep, my animal did that. Oh, yeah, you know. And then the questionnaire, when you go through the questionnaire, you will, by the end of the questionnaire, really understand what the dynamics are with you and your animal. And then in Chapter 7, I tell you how to address that and how to shift it so that it's, you know, you can turn it back to the positive.
Well, and I did part of the questionnaire myself, and one of them I thought was so interesting of listing the positive qualities of this animal. What particularly do you love about the animal? And conversely, also the negative. But one of the things in your list of inquiries was, how did you find this animal? Because sometimes mm-hmm. we feel like the animal found us.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that beginning so important?
Well, it goes back to what I call the metaphysical aspect of this process whereby your animal can reflect you. Because I really think that animals come into our lives specifically to help us, so that it's not an accident who you have in your life. And many, many, many animal people, I'm sure many people who are listening to your program, know that there were too many coincidences that occurred on the road toward getting a particular animal to say that it was just coincidence.
Yep,
there were too many.
Yeah.
It was too striking.
And so, you see it a lot in the rescue circles of people saying, I have no idea how I ended up with this dog or this cat or this sheep. Or
all my animals are like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I even know that some of them, other animals who had died, made sure that I got together with that animal, mm-hmm. that new animal. So here's an example of that happening. This woman I know, not so much the finding of the animal, but the result of getting that animal. She, as a friend of mine, she got this horse for her daughter, and she thought the horse was really easygoing, but when she got the horse home, the horse turned out to be really mean and pushy and dangerous. And she really didn't know what to do, so she got somebody to help her with some natural horsemanship techniques, and she started using them on the horse, and they worked, and the horse started giving her more respect and respecting her space. And my friend said that she had this realization that everybody in her life was pushing her around the same way the horse had been pushing her around. And the horse made her see that. The interaction with this horse made her realize that. Then she said, well, I'm going to try these same techniques and just, tweak them a little bit and make them work for people. And so she started doing the same techniques with the people in her life, and they were all like reacting the same way the horse was.
It's very interesting.
And she really started to realize her own power with humans because of this horse.
Yeah. I mean, when you say that, I think about it, just those questions you ask. How did I meet a person? Was it positive? How long did I know? It's really a beautiful book, My Animal, Myself, A Breakthrough Way to Understand How You and Your Animal Reflect Each Other. So author Marta Williams will be with us when we return.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Arnold, Director of Canine Assistance, www.canineassistance.org, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zohara Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Don't forget, there are links to all our guests right on the front page at 21st.st, centuryradio.com, and every show is archived and is free for your listening pleasure and to share with others. Marta Williams is currently with us. You can learn more about her work, her travels, her teachings at www.martawilliams.com. Her book that we're discussing, My Animal, Myself, A Breakthrough Way to Understand How You and Your Animal Reflect Each Other, and it's a New World Library 2013 release. So in your book, Marta, you go through these different ways of working with yourself, with your animals, with the world. And one of them you say is affirmations. What are affirmations and how do they help working with our animals?
Right. Once you go through the book, understand how mirroring works, have gone through the questionnaire and possibly found something that you aren't happy with about yourself, for example, then using a positive phrase to affect the energy of a negative situation is the essence of affirmation.
So let me give you a situation and you tell me how affirmation would work.
Sure.
What if you have a dog, a very large dog, who doesn't come when you call, no matter what you do? They won't come for treats. They won't come on a leash unless you drag them.
Right. Well, when I have a client with a situation like that, an affirmation all by itself isn't going to make, it's not going to make the difference. You
right.
need to approach that in a number of ways,
mm-hmm.
but it would be one component. And so the affirmation for that would be, let's say his name is Remy. Remy comes every time I call now.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea behind affirmations is instead of thinking, oh my God, this dog is useless and I'll never get him to do this. You know, I have to get rid of him. Instead of going to the negative, which then just brings in more negative energy.
Right.
So it's all an energetic process.
Right.
You say, nope, I'm not going to focus on that anymore. I'm going to focus on the positive. Even though you're still in the midst of Remy not coming, you just start going, Remy comes every time I call,
mm-hmm.
every time.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to create that energy around the situation. And in connection with at least 10 other, you know, activities that you're going to do to shift the behavior, then you're going to start seeing the result.
Right. And, of course, you make very clear that that's when you need to talk to the animal. Maybe something happened to them in another part of their life. You may not know what it was, but they can show you pictures. So having conversations, talk to us a little bit about this mirroring and actually talking with your animals.
Right. When I, well, the book is, this particular book doesn't teach you how to do animal communication. My other books do.
Yeah, I didn't mean
so
much.
Give you,
go ahead.
It does give you the tools to understand what mirroring might be going on.
Right.
And then in terms of talking to your animal about it, one of the things that I say is, you know, talking's the easy part. And the trick is, a lot of animal people don't do this, talk to your animal as if your animal completely understands you the way a person would. So you sit down and have a heart-to-heart talk about exactly how you feel about what's going on, how it's making you feel, what you're going through, what you want to see happening, what your dream would be, what your ideal would be. Show them a movie, like a scenario in your mind of the ideal. Like if they have taken on your illness and you both have, you know, back problems or something, you just say, I'm going to work on my problems. I'm going to find something new for you. But here's my dream. We're going to both be healthy. So, and then you would show them that dream and talk to them about it.
Is there a way to know if your animal is mirroring you?
Well,
meaning
the
some
way to know is if you go through the questionnaire and you really get some hits on that questionnaire and go, oh my gosh, okay, this is really, you know, this is clearly because of me. For example, I told a story about my dog, one of my dogs, and how I decided that she was really dog aggressive. And that was an inaccurate assessment of her, but I made the decision that she was dog aggressive, and then I started treating her that way. And then whenever we would go out, she would, you know, lunge at dogs, and it was just a big mess. And finally, somebody said, you know, hello, you're causing that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that? You know, and sort of gave me some ideas on how to deal with it. And I was just astounded to see that when somebody else would handle her, she wouldn't do it.
Right, right.
So that was the proof for me on that one. So each situation is different, Zahara. You know, you can't say that it's a certain way you're going to know, but that would be an example of how you would know that was you, not them.
And as a biologist, what do you think is happening in terms of this mirroring between animals and humans, even in nature and humans, there's so many directions to go with this, but specifically as
right.
your book is with animals, what is
right.
biologically going on that makes it such a rapport?
Well, I don't know that it's really necessarily a biological phenomenon. It's more of a psychological phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who really helped me understand it is Margot Lasher, who's a psychologist from New York. And she wrote a book called And the Animals Will Teach You, which is a great book. And what she says is that the real essential difference between animals and humans is that animals have a completely open heart. They don't shut their heart. The way she says it is we always know that animals won't hurt us the way humans do. They won't make fun of us and reject us and do things that humans do to each other. They just won't do it. And they have what she calls uninterrupted empathy. Now, my theory is that human beings were like that before modern culture came along. So I believe that in indigenous culture, people are like this. They have open hearts and they're completely empathetic. However, in the last 8,000 years, a lot has happened on this planet, and mm-hmm. we've all learned how to disassociate and shut our hearts And animals do not do that unless they're severely abused. So they stay in connection with us, and they know how we feel, what we're thinking. They know our thoughts. They know our feelings. They know everything about us. And when you get into the domestic animal situation, they are with us 24/7. So they're with our thoughts and our feelings 24/7 without any kind of filters. And so they want, they're kind, it's like they just want everybody to be happy. They want everything to be fun and happy and calm and nice. And they're going to do everything they can to get that happening in their lives with us. And if that means showing us, acting out, showing us what's wrong, for example, one of the stories in my book, this would be an indirect example, is a cat who started peeing, and when I talked to her, she said, it's not about the cat boxes. It's not, I don't have anything wrong, although she'd already been checked by the vet. I always say check with the vet.
Sure.
She said, it's her husband. I don't like him. He's being mean to me. He's being mean to her. You need to do something about it. And, of course, that put me in the awkward position of having to go back to this woman and say, so how are you and your husband getting along?
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of how animals show you everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did it in a very tactful way, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of tipping my foot in the water and mm-hmm. toe in the water. And she said, oh, yes, we have huge problems. And then I just said, okay, well, this is what your cat's trying to tell me, that you have this huge problem. And
yeah.
So let's talk about what you could do to, you know, to resolve it. And so... So I gave her some ideas and, you know, suggested this, that, and the other, and she did everything. I got an email 2 months later saying, you won't believe it, but my cat and my husband are great friends now. She's using the box all the time. Everybody's happy. He and I have, you know, mm-hmm. had a new coming to terms, and everything's great. And it was all because of this cat.
And do you think, you know, beyond animals reading our body language, don't you think at a soul level or at a consciousness field, our consciousness is also interconnected, that there's sort of an unspoken knowingness or I can't find the right words for it because it's more of an experience than something I can articulate, but that there's
right.
that there's an inherent unity between all that is. And
right.
I have to also say all that isn't, but we'll deal with what is for the moment. And that by having and paying attention and then having an positive intention is what changes the frequency, which therefore
yes.
changes the form and there changes the act.
Yes. And so let me correct any misconception that I might have perpetuated here. Animals are not reading our body language. They're reading our minds. They're reading our emotions, our hearts. So it's exactly what you just said, Zahara.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they know how to do. Because nobody ever trained them not to do it. We were trained
right.
not to do it, but we all know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We all still do it. We just have been trained to disassociate and shut it off.
Right.
Animals can't do that. They weren't trained to do that, and they won't do that because they know that it is not in their best interest to shut down their heart. They're going to be safer. They're going to know when the earthquake's coming. They're going to know if somebody's a bad person who's going to do something bad to them at a distance because they don't shut their heart down. So they're much more in tune with the environment and everything going around. They know how everybody in the room feels. They know what everybody in the room is thinking. That, you know, the nice dog who's weird to the one guy knows that that guy has something really dark going on in his mind, you know?
Mm-hmm. And
that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. And when you talked a little bit about how writing this book yourself, I mean, how it helped you look at your own life with others.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't easy writing this book.
I bet it wasn't.
It's a really complicated subject, and when I went and researched it, nobody has really written about it. Nobody's done this research, not
mm-hmm.
even for people. But what I realized is that everything I'm saying about your animals in you is actually true about everything in your life. Everything in your life is really a mirror. And I talked about how Shakti Gawain has a book about that, you know. So people have written a little bit about that subject. but not anything about how animals are mirrors, you know, for what's going on in our lives. But what I did realize through this process was, okay, so everything that happens, even all the bad things, you know, that you don't want to think about, are actually reflections of something in yourself, and that if you can suspend your feeling of like, oh my God, you know, I did something wrong or whatever, and just take a look at it objectively and say, what did I do that could have created a situation for that bad thing to happen? If you can stand back enough and do that, you will learn so much about yourself. So I did it with a situation in the book I talk about. This woman was being really rude to me, and I'm like, God, this is just no good. I'm not having fun.
Yeah, it's a good story.
And I stood back, and I said, why is this happening? And I realized when I was able to do that I had allowed her, I had allowed the relationship to keep going when I should have cut it off much sooner. And I did that because I'm always trying to be nice and please, you know, and mm-hmm. give everybody a chance. And so the lesson I learned is you don't do that anymore, because once you know that something's not working, you either deal with it and try to make it work head on, or you just stop it, you know.
Right, which you call figuring out the real problem.
Right.
and that it's the same thing with our animals, and it's the same thing with anything that we encounter in our life. So in terms of how, the book is really beautiful. And like I said, the stories are so clear, we certainly can't go through them all. But if you were to summarize the stories of the what you might call negative or not supportive mirroring, what do we learn from that?
Well, there's so many different ways that, quote, you know, negative or non-optimal mirroring can happen. For example, it can be completely unconscious. It's not like you're doing something on purpose.
Right.
So the main point of this book is like, okay, this is going to happen whether you are a perfect person or not, because animals will just take on our stuff because they love us.
Right.
They're trying to help us heal. They're with us 24/7. They can't help it. They're like little pieces of litmus paper. They're going to take on our stuff. If you're really worried about your money and your job and this and that, your animals are going to be worried too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come out as stress stuff in them too.
Mm-hmm.
So the big picture is, let's figure out how is my animal taking on my stuff, and let me find the ways to address it in myself and in them so that they don't have to and I don't have to be so negatively affected.
Mm-hmm. I really have
so
to stop.
So that we can have a more positive, you know, everybody can be healthier and happier. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really the goal of this book is, let's all be healthy and happy.
Amen. I'm for that. And I love the fact that
with your background, I think that would be an appealing prospect.
Yeah, I like that. No, and I love that you talk about, you know, holistic medicine for animals mm-hmm. and there's different remedies.
I love
remedies.
That you're into that so much, too. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's so many things I would love to tell you. We have to take a little break. When we come back, what I was going to say right before is I said I really should stop weeing on the floor.
Oh,
we'll be right
funny.
Back with our guest, Marta Williams. I encourage you all to read this beautiful book, My Animal, Myself, A Breakthrough Way to Understand How You and Your Animal Reflect Each Other.
This is Catherine Paul with the Organic Consumers Association, www.organicconsumers.org. This is 21st Century Radio with Zohara Hieronymus.
Welcome back. Our guest is Marta Williams. Her current book, My Animal, Myself, A Breakthrough Way to Understand How You and Your Animal Reflect Each Other. It's a New World Library 2013 release, and somebody sent in an email. What, Zoe, you wee on the floor? No, folks, that was a joke about if you mirror your dogs and your dogs mirror you. I have two of my little dogs sometimes wee on the floor. They'll be outside, they'll go to the bathroom, then they'll walk inside and wee on the plant. What's that about, Marta? Because a lot of dogs do that.
Yeah, in lots of situations, it could be different things, but
sure.
I mean, they if there's any kind of smell of urine, it's going to cue them to urinate there again.
Oh, I
so,
see.
Mm-hmm. And it's always fun to get rid of the smell of urine, so that's kind of the first step. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that was the joke. So, ladies and gentlemen, I don't really wee on
somehow
my floor.
Didn't get that one.
Though in Egypt, I had to wee in a hole, and that worked fine. That was what you did. So, coming back to your beautiful book, My Animal, Myself, when you look at this mirroring, sometimes you see animals carrying an illness that a human has or relieving a human of an illness they had.
Right. I interviewed a lot of holistic veterinarians for the book.
Right.
And Dr. Goldstein was one of them. He wrote The Nature of Animal Healing. And he said that he sees it all the time in his practice. And he told the story about a dog that was fine, belonged to one of two brothers, and the one brother decided to give the dog to the other brother. The other brother had, everybody in that family had a specific kind of heart condition. And when the dog went to live with that family within a year, he got the same kind of heart condition and had to take the same kind of medicine. And it was just those kinds of things happen so often in the practice of holistic vets that they just expect it now. Okay, mm-hmm. Somebody in the family is going to have the same condition. Mm-hmm. So what I see happening with that is that animals, like I said, they want to be, they love us so much, they want to be in sync with us. So they will take on our characteristics. And one of the things that I have people do in Chapter 7, the very first thing when you have your talk with your animal about anything you find that's negative, overlapping, you say, look, I want you to be really healthy and really happy, so let go of my stuff, please. Thank you for showing me. I got it. I'm going to go work on it. Let go of it. And instead, could you be a model of health and happiness for me to follow? So that's like sort of the first talk that you would have with your animal about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think as you mentioned earlier in terms of the positive affirmation, positive visioning, you also say in terms of like making a movie, describe for us that process.
Right. It's what I call the coach approach, and it's first, you tell your animal, this is my dream of how I would like things to be. And then you show them, you close your eyes and you imagine in your mind exactly how you would like things to be, like a scenario, like you run a scene of your dog, when we were talking about the dog not coming when called, you run a scene of the dog coming when called in five or six different situations. And how happy you are, and how happy the dog is, and how great it is, and how much fun they're having, and how they get to go all over the place off-leash because the dog will now come when called. So you're showing them the alternate reality. And you're giving intention and energy to the alternate reality at the same time. And the dog or the animal will see everything you have in your mind.
Well, I know it's true. I mean, as a dog lover, I used to have lots of cats, other animals as well. But I know, for instance, one of my dogs, if I plan on grocery shopping that day, he sits and waits at the door knowing I'm going to be going grocery shopping. And when he can't come because it's too hot to go in the car, it's like he's already upset before we've even gone.
Right. And then you just have to explain to him what that's about. But that's the experiment that Rupert Sheldrake did. He said, animals know when their owners are coming home without any environmental clues or cues. And he did the experiment, and he did it scientifically with statistical analysis to show that this one dog would know exactly when his owner started thinking about coming home. She could be sitting in the library, and they gave her a random slip that said, go to the library, sit there for an hour, and then come home. And she could have sat at the library for an hour, and then after the hour's up, before she gets up, mind you, she's like 5 miles away from home in a library. She goes, okay, I'm going to go home now. Her dog goes to the door, and they have a camera on the dog, and they prove it over and over, all different random situations. The dog predicted when the owner thought about coming home.
And the reason I brought this up is that our thoughts are so important. It's not just how we treat the animals that are around us, but how we think about them and what we think about with them or for them.
Yes. Exactly, and you have no secrets from your animals. There's just, you know, so don't even think that you do. That's an illusion. One of the things I talk about mental mirroring in the book is one of my friends who I like to go writing with. She said, she told me when I was writing the book, I said, so Morgan, do you have a story? And she goes, well, you know, I really am claustrophobic in trailers, so whenever I try to put a horse in a trailer, I always have a hard time because I don't want to go in there. And I said, oh, so that's why we have so much trouble getting your horses in the trailer.
Uh-huh.
Who knew? You know, she never had told me this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always this big struggle to get her horses in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing going through water. She felt the same way about going through water, and none of her horses want to go through water. So it's really important.
And as you also point out, you know, people have such close relationships with their animals, and as they express this unconditional related lovingness and empathy, when an animal dies, the grieving is so severe some people won't even have another animal in their life.
Right, at least for a while. I mean, I think they usually give in and can't be animal-less for the rest
mm-hmm.
of their life. But yes, the reason that that's so hard and harder for many people than losing the people in their life is because animals, again, have that open heart, that complete unconditional love. They're with us 24/7, and they don't shut their hearts down to us, and they will not hurt us the same way people do, and we all know that.
And it's also interesting, and I've interviewed so many wonderful people who work with death and dying, as well as people who've worked with animals, and all of us, and my own life experience shows me that when my animals pass away out of their physical bodies, they show up in my dreams. I see flashes of them sometimes in certain places and situations, so that they really do, like a human soul, remain connected to us. We don't ever lose anybody or any animal.
Agreed.
And what about when animals, you had mentioned something which I've also experienced, where one animal passes away and you feel very clearly that that animal made sure that another animal, whether it was the same species or another, came into your life. Talk to us a little bit about your own experience of feeling that or sensing it.
Right. I tell a story about when I lost my horse Dylan, who's a white Arab. They call him gray, but he was white. I was devastated, and I wasn't planning to get another horse. I was just, like you said, it was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And some friends of mine said, oh, you got to come see this horse. You got to save him because he's dying, and he needs a place to die because he's in a horrible situation where this other horse is biting him, and he's got the runs, and he's miserable. So I just went and saw him, and he was a white Arab, but he looked horrible. And I just said, okay, I'll take him home and give him a place to die. Well, then, after a week, he started to get better. Everything cleared up, all his illness, and he started to look really good because he was putting on weight, and then pretty soon he started to look exactly like Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that he had been an endurance horse. He was completely safe to ride on the trail, and I went, oh, my gosh, you know, my horse, Dylan, found me another horse that was just like him that would be good to go, you know, like
yeah.
instant replacement. But I was seriously, I would never have gone out to look for another white
mm-hmm.
Arab. That would never have been on my agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that that happened because of him.
Now, as you do this work and you travel around the world, are there parts of the world where you find that this is an easy conversation and others where perhaps it's a little more challenging?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's cultural, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that everybody sort of knows the cultures that don't treat animals that well.
There are so many people now practicing animal communication, thankfully, because there's so many
mm-hmm.
wonderful, primarily women, teaching this
mm-hmm.
around the world with
mm-hmm.
all different kinds of animals. When you do your work, Marta, do you find that when you've worked with a certain species for a while that it's easier with that species? For instance, rather than talking to the sharks, if you've talked with dogs a long time, it's easier.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, I have a rapport with all nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that that women are actually less repressed than men. And that's why we have sort of the freedom to make these connections with
mm-hmm.
animals.
Mm-hmm.
And that men are held in the straitjacket of expectation by modern culture. That they have to be rational, they have to be logical, they can't be emotional, they can't. So in many ways, they're more damaged by culture than we are,
mm-hmm.
than women are.
No, I think it's true.
Not all men, mm-hmm. but a lot. And that's why you see more women doing this than men. I think a lot of men really want to do this, but they're afraid because it means that they'd be being like women. They'd be being sissy or girls or mm-hmm. silly or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this, again, this what Rupert said was a taboo. And one of his colleagues, you know, they were out having a beer, and he said, Rupert, I know this stuff is real, but you didn't expect me to say that in public, do you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, unfortunately, the stranglehold that modern culture has on men. They are just as psychic, they're just as interested, they're just, you know, as concerned about the animals and the earth, but they aren't as free as women are to go for it, because women are allowed to be weird and, you know, mm-hmm. emotional and intuitive and all that.
Right, exactly. And how would you describe, I mean, you had a life before doing this work, you described it to us as a biologist and restoring mm-hmm. streams. How has this changed you? Doing this kind of life work?
Yeah, I've sort of turned more into the absent-minded professor type. You
know? I think that's why I'm drawn to it.
It's made me more artistic, you know, more uh-huh. like an... I mean, it's balanced out my personality because I was definitely more of a scientist type.
Mm-hmm.
So it has brought more of the artist into my personality.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lovely service to be able to communicate for and with those that not everybody can hear. At least that's always been my pleasure in the work. And in interviewing you and in reading your book, it's such a beautiful community of humans worldwide, working with such a beautiful community of animals worldwide. And it always restores my hope and my anticipation of perfect peace on earth when I talk to people like yourself.
Yes. I have that hope as well.
And is there anything that you are moving towards that sort of is something we can close with, something we haven't touched on? We have about a minute left.
Well, the only other thing I would say is that I do believe that our animals are our biggest teachers and healers.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really talk about them coming in on purpose and the stories people have with that. But I do believe that they do come and find us. And I think they come a lot of times with a purpose to help us heal, to help us learn some lesson that we need to learn in life, to be our co-pilots, as it were. Like a lot of my animals are here to help me teach people,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just believe that there's that spiritual/metaphysical component to our relationship with our animals.
I agree with you completely. It's a beautiful work, a beautiful life. Marta Williams, thank you for being with us on 21st
hey,
Century
thank
Radio.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome
really
very fun. Much. My animal myself, a breakthrough way to understand how you and your animals reflect each other. Don't forget, links to all of our guests are online, but you can go to martawilliams.com.
Happy ever after.
Talk around the clock and breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio. I'm Bill Vitka.